This is the House Judiciary Committee, March 5th, 1985, Subcommittee 2.
House Judiciary Subcommittee will come to order, please. Clerk will take note of those present. All others are excused. We are going to take the bills in order as they are on the agenda. Representative Bauman will be testifying on House Bill 2531, and so we, at the appropriate time, try to get him up here on time as we finish 2361. So we'll begin a hearing on House Bill 2359. We have a sign-up sheet.
Sure, sir.
This bill is at the request of the Oregon State Bar, so I'll ask Mr. Don Carter.
Good afternoon, Don Carter, firm of McEwen, Gisbold, Rankin, Stewart, testifying on behalf of the Oregon State Bar. And I did not hear the bill call. Which one?
House Bill 2359.
Okay. The bar will submit a written testimony at a later time. This bill would repeal the provisions of the Oregon statutes that require a disclaimer regarding the zoning the zoning uses of real property. It requires that language be included in all documents transferring title of real property. And there are three reasons why that language should be eliminated from the statute, and that requirement should be eliminated. The first is that the language provides a trap for the seller in that nothing in the statute says that the deed or conveyance is still effective even if that language is not included. There is a provision in the statute that states that the clerk may record the document in the absence of that language. But there's nothing to state that the transfer is still good or that the conveyance is good. And there are questions of title that may arise because of this statutory requirement in the event that the language is omitted from any document transferring title. The second reason why this language is should be deleted is that in some transactions, especially commercial transactions, but also residential transactions, it may be that the seller will wish to warrant the uses of the property that are permissible under zoning requirements. And the statute makes no provision for that situation and requires a statement in all documents transferring title to real property. The third reason is that the language simply opens the door for other language of similar nature. For example, some years ago in the legislature, a bill was presented requiring that documents transferring the title to real property indicate which school district the property was located in. This type of a provision simply opens the door for all kinds of other mandated language to be included in deeds of trust and deeds and other documents transferring title. And For those three reasons, the Oregon State Bar Real Estate and Land Use Section recommends that this provision be deleted from the statute. The Oregon State Bar Real Estate and Land Use Section is the committee that recommended adoption of this language 2 years ago, and after seeing it in practice, the recommendation is that it be deleted.
Can I ask now, are you a member of that subcommittee?
Yes, I am.
And you participated in the hearings? Did you participate in the discussion on this?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. Now, I guess what you're trying to do is prohibit the use of any types of limitations on the deed, or?
No. What the statute requires of this language, and I unfortunately did not have a copy of the statute to read, but in any event, the statute requires that this disclaimer language be included in, and what the bar's proposed bill would do is simply require delete that requirement that language be included in deeds or trust deeds or any other document that conveys an interest in real property. Did I answer your question? I'm not sure that I understood.
I guess what I'm seeing here is in the statute is a warning that sort of people ought to know when they buy a piece of property. If I buy a house, and you know, I should know that, just the property without a house, it ought to be my responsibility to check to see the zoning requirements, etc. And then, so this is sort of a little gentle reminder to me that, you know, you ought to be careful, sort of a consumer type piece of warning device here.
But I think in two ways it really doesn't benefit the consumer. And
it does or doesn't?
It does not. And one of them is in those circumstances where as a seller, you are buying the property for me as a seller based on a representation that I have made. And basically I am warranting to you. And if the representation is untrue, you have a cause of action against me for a misrepresentation with respect to the use of that property. And in those instances where the seller is willing to make such a warranty, this statute doesn't make any sense because it still has to be included in the deed even though the agreement between the parties was totally contrary. I think the second way that it's not helpful to consumers is that we don't know yet what the effect on title is if this language is not included in a deed. There is an argument that perhaps the deed is ineffective if it doesn't include this language, and that matter has not been raised in court, but the practitioners in the real estate field do have that concern, that and that does not benefit either the buyer or the seller, the consumer being either one of them in that case.
So you're afraid that if somebody accidentally leaves this off, then there presents a cloud on the title in terms of was there a lawful conveyance because they omitted this language?
That's correct.
And that this has not been litigated as yet?
No one in the committee or the section that I'm aware of is aware of any litigation on that particular point, but it's a matter that was raised by a number of different people in the discussions of this proposed bill.
Now, it's my understanding that, in no way am I an expert in this area, that basically we're talking about forms that are printed up for run-of-the-mill property-type transactions, and it would seem that this type of language would just be typeset, and away we go.
Well,
somebody might even require you, you know, more responsible parties might even ask you to initial this particular little warning box.
Clearly, there are legal forms that are made up that contain this language. I might point out that there are a number of pre-printed forms out there. I'm sure at title companies and Stevens Nest forms in practitioners' offices and other places that do not contain this language. I think the pitfall, that's one of the concerns, is that some practitioner may not recognize or may not realize that the deed that's being used to convey title does not contain this disclaimer language.
But after each session, I think that the bar usually puts out little publications that tell where law changes are, and you know, there's a general requirement that attorneys particularly know the law. And with respect to real estate companies, they have continuing legal education seminars as well. And if you look at one of those forms that they put out when they try to buy a house, you can tell that the law has been involved in the real estate area, because they always say something like, oh, this is just some sort of little thing that the legislature is requiring us to put on this form. And somehow they get the message.
I don't quarrel with you that this is a requirement of the statute that lawyers and others involved in real property should be aware of. And I think that the concern is that this is one of those types of things that really is a trap, because it doesn't really fit in with what a deed is purporting to do. The purpose of the deed is simply to transfer title to the real property. The language of a statutory warranty deed or a statutory bargain and sale deed in ORS Chapter 93 is very simple, and this adds something not directly related to the purpose of that instrument that a lawyer may overlook, or the form that the lawyer is using just may not contain it. I don't think that we're just looking at the lawyer's interest here, but also the interest of the public in knowing whether or not there has been a valid conveyance. Is the conveyance valid if the deed does not contain that language? That's an open question right now.
Well, do we allow restrictions on deeds, don't we?
There
are terms that go to the use of the property.
Yes.
And some of them are lawful and some may not be. As, mm-hmm. For example, you cannot sell, you know, saying that you cannot sell to black people. Now, we know that would be illegal to do. You could put it down, but it would have no force in effect of law.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that correct?
That's true.
Okay. Now, we also know that generally that there may be some county zoning requirements or land use issues that may restrict the use of the property. This is our general knowledge, and I guess I'm still having a tough time understanding this, but perhaps one of the other members of the committee may have some questions in this area. I have to think about this.
Okay. This is not a bill that I had planned on giving testimony on, and so perhaps I'm not able to direct specific answers to your questions, but hopefully the written testimony that we will submit very shortly will perhaps add some light.
And I do recognize that the notice of the hearing on these bills was very short, and I do appreciate the fact that you could be here on this and the other bills as well. We have a couple of other witnesses. Thank you very much.
Yes, I'll bring that back.
Mr. Nevin, is it? And Mr. Winterout and Ron Eber, do you all three want to come up here together, since you checked the box that says against?
We're supposed to all be on the same side?
I think so.
Okay.
So if you try not to duplicate your testimony, that would speed up our process here and save
right.
you folks some time as well.
Chairman Kopetsky and members of the committee, my name is Russ Niebong. A little bit of a different name. And I'm chief planner for Marion County. I'm here as a spokesperson for the Association of Oregon County Planning Directors, all 36 counties. I thought I would begin my testimony first by giving a little background in case some of you weren't involved in this issue back in 1981 and in 83. As you probably know, the recording law allows anyone to record a deed or a contract transferring a property without any requirement that the transfer be reviewed to determine if it conforms to the local subdivision requirements, or whether the intended uses of the property comply with local zoning regulations. We have found, because of the state land use goals and the planning efforts that have been going on, particularly at the county level, that a lot of areas have been downzoned, the subdivision regulations have been changed, and a lot of people, for one reason or another, have not been aware of these changes, and these property transactions continue on the old manner without people bothering to check. And in 1981, we worked with several groups to try and find a way through the assessor's office that we could get a review of these deeds before the assessor created a new tax lot on the assessment maps. That would then give us the chance to notify these people of any problems with the land division itself and deal with that problem. The problem of the intended use of the property doesn't crop up until they actually come in and ask for a building permit, and very often the seller is long gone by then, and you have a problem of somebody wanting to use the land, assuming that they could use it for that, and finding out that these new regulations and changes preclude that or require some kind of a long involved review process that complicates their plans. The process of using the assessors as a control point had some liability problems, it had complications, and so in 1981 the bill was abandoned in the hope that coming back in 1983 we could come up with a better approach. What we did was we kind of split the issue. We took a two-pronged approach and proposed that the assessors just be required to notify the county planning office within 90 days of any new tax lots that were created for other than just assessment purposes. This we felt was kind of as early warning an approach as we could get. It would give us a chance to see any gross violations, write letters to the people that were involved, and hopefully get everybody that was involved in the original transfer before the county to address the problem before we were too far down the road and before we ran into the building permit problem. The other prong of the fork was to put this disclaimer in the law as a kind of an early warning system to the buyer that whatever the property owner warrants the use may be isn't necessarily valid because the county zoning regulations are preemptive and they stipulate what can be done with the property, and they do change. And the property owner can warrant whatever use he says, and he might be subject to civil suit if he doesn't warrant correctly. But the county zoning is the bottom line on the issue. And if the use that's intended isn't allowed under county zoning, that should be known up front. And your comments about people checking and finding that out early in the process, I think, is very valid. And that's the intent of this disclaimer, is to just remind people that they shouldn't necessarily depend on what the real estate agent or what the lawyer assumes are the permitted uses on the property. And we have had people see that wording and come into the office and inquire in response to that. I'm sure that, like a lot of other things in legal documents, people tend to skim over it, and maybe they feel that they know what the law is. But we feel that it's consumer protection law and that it's a good law. And as you pointed out, it's relatively easy to administer. Once it gets into the documents, people can see it, follow it. It shouldn't be a burden on anybody to have that in those deeds. So on behalf of county planning directors, I would just like to say that we strongly support keeping this in the law. And I have no problem. The lawyer indicated that there was a question about the legality of a deed that maybe didn't include this wording on it. I have no problem if somebody wants to propose some wording that clarifies that point. If a parcel is otherwise lawfully created and the only deficiency is the absence of this wording on the bottom of the deed, I don't think we're holding out for that being a violation of the law in any respect. I think that could be clarified. I think the wording that's in there now, allowing the recording of the deed even if it doesn't have that on it, implies that, and if it's not clear enough, we could clarify that even further. But beyond that, we would like to keep it the way it is.
Okay. Why don't we get testimony from the other two gentlemen first, and then we'll ask the question later. Is it Mr. Winterout?
My name is Greg Wintero. I represent the Oregon APA as well as the state planning directors on this issue. I agree with everything that my colleague, Mr. Nibon, said. We have exactly the same sorts of problems in the city that you have in the county with people coming in, buying a property, thinking they can do something with their land that, in fact, they can't under acknowledged comprehensive plans. There's another issue I'd like to add, and that is one of simple staff time. As you're probably aware, cities all over the country, all over this country, are having to cut down on staff because we just don't have the budgets to support large planning staffs anymore. And we spend a lot of time on issues such as this, explaining to irate property owners that, in fact, they can't do what they thought they could do when they bought their property. This offers a protection for them, but also, I believe, would save a lot of staff time over the next several years. That concludes my discussion.
Thank you.
What's the APA?
American Planning Association.
Mr. Eber.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Ron Eber. I'm the legal policy coordinator for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We are also in opposition to this bill. And if I could try and summarize our perspective on this, we're not only dealing with a legal issue here, which is, I think, the concern of the Bar Association, but particularly a planning and therefore a political issue at the local and state level in terms of planning. As Mr. Nibon pointed out, the planning law has changed. The current landowner may not know what the current planning and zoning is. And people buy property, particularly in the country, that may not have been legally partitioned at any time, but someone tells them, I got this 5 acres or I've got a tax lot, and they sell it to them. Then they want to do something, and they find out that they can't get a dwelling, or there's a long process that's involved in getting it approved, and they may not get it approved. And this creates the issue that I believe you're all aware of called lots of record, and probably one of the most hotly contested controversial planning issues since about 1975 has been the issue of lots of record in the legislature, and that is, what can people who own property that may have been legally partitioned and in many cases not legally partitioned, just simply purchased or passed down over the years, and they find out that they're not able to do what they want, and they come to the county commissioners and they want to do something, and it creates a group of people who want changes in the law and are quite frustrated. And it was felt when this bill was passed last session that this disclaimer would aid the planning process, the enforcement of the planning process, that if the landowner knew in advance that even though they bought the property, they were not assured of any particular use without checking first with the planning office. The bill was frankly a compromise. Other proposals on the table were to say that you couldn't convey property or record a sale without that prior sign-off by the planning department or the governing body to avoid that problem. And so, in effect, by putting this warning up here, you make it possible for the planning community at the local level and the state level to say, yes, you may have a problem, you may have bought something, and now you can't do what you thought you could do with it, but you were warned. Whereas before they come in, they haven't gotten the warning, and then the pressure's on us to try and help them out or solve a problem that really wasn't of our creation in simply carrying out the land use law. So we oppose this bill, and I think if there's problems with the validity of title, I don't think the planning community is concerned with upsetting that or dealing with that. But in terms of the planning issue, there's got to be a way of making sure that we don't start grandfathering development on lots of lots that people have bought with a belief they could do something when, in fact, the land was not properly and legally partitioned under the planning laws of Oregon.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Bach.
When this language went into effect, I was favorable toward it. I thought it would be a beneficial thing. My experience as a lawyer is that it simply isn't used. It's a surplusage in a deed or a document that is a waste of word processing space. And I always look at an issue in terms of what benefit does the public get for the little bit of effort we're spending putting this in here. And obviously it's so small I don't feel strongly about it. But my comment would be that everything you've said about the need planners have is true, but this statement doesn't do a whit to meet your need. And I just wonder if you care to comment on that.
I'd be glad to, because frequently, if you have a citizen that comes in and say, if you look at your deed when you purchase the property, or you made, and they'll say, yeah, we reviewed it. If you look carefully, it has a document, it has a statement on it that says, you should have checked with us first. It tends to pull the legs out from under their argument. And we are not then caught in the middle between what is essentially an owner, conveyor, and a buyer's dispute.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what you're saying by that statement is that people didn't read that, and you can say later when they try to point to that, well, you had a chance to know, and so we're not on the hook as planners anymore. My point is that that statement is not an effective method of getting people into your office beforehand. My experience, and I'd like to have you comment if you have a different experience, is that people read the deed or the contract, they turn it over to their attorney to review. Their attorney does the checking on this issue, if they're a good attorney, and the individual does not. My experience with individuals that try to do their own deeds and contracts is that they don't deal with this kind of thing. And I think as a practical matter, while it gets you off the hook later by saying it was in there, it's your tough luck if you didn't see it, it is not an effective warning to citizens in advance, which they effectively use to come into planners and ask questions.
On that point, we met with both the planning directors and the board of the American Planning Association to discuss this, and everyone reported that people had, in fact, gotten phone calls saying, what does this mean on my deed? On a fairly regular basis.
I'm
so
surprised.
I think it is something to just use.
Representative Burton?
I appreciate what you're attempting to do, I think, in the sense of your concern for finding some way of sending out, you mentioned early warning. I guess the question I get, sort of along with what Representative Bunn is saying, is that by the time you get to the deed point, it's not an early warning, it's a late warning. And I don't know whether in the previous session this was discussed at all, but is there another point at which this warning ought to be issued earlier in the process, before we've gotten to the point of exchanging or making a covenant, which is already in fact a commitment to purchase and that sort of thing. I think Representative Bellamy mentioned me a little bit earlier that maybe the right place for this would be an exchange of earnest money kind of thing, or a sign off on a sheet. I mean, if we're going to the point of, you know, I agree, I every deed I've ever seen, and I learned the hard way to read them very carefully, but I think generally the public kind of peruses those, makes some assumptions, and even if it's in giant type print or whatever, it's not often something that's looked at. But the intent of what you're trying to do is important. Is there some way, or was there some discussion in the previous session, to move that up at some other point where that warning would be given, or an actual sign-off saying, yes, I'm aware of this, and I've read this statement, and I will do this prior to earnest money commitment or something like that?
If I may, Representative Burton, at the time in 83 when we were developing this concept and we had to drift away from the control point being when the deed was recorded that there'd be some kind of planning department sign-off because of the liability issues and others, and we split the process apart, we looked at putting it in the escrow agreements or the earnest money agreements and other kinds of approaches. And there was concern that those don't address all the transactions that end up resulting in the deed. And I don't recall all of the testimony and discussion on that, but it was felt that at the deed point was the best we could have under the circumstances that the whole property transfer process allows us. Now, let me add, we would much rather go back and have our original proposal. We realize there are legal problems with it. This approach with the deed notice is not a perfect solution. We recognize that. But that, together with the assessors providing us with the notice, seems to be the best we can achieve in the context of the legalities of the situation now. If there are better ways up front to deal with it, we're certainly willing to look at them and address them. But we're not aware of any at this point that don't create greater problems than what this does.
Representative Bellamy.
I want you to know, above board, I have a bias. I have a real estate license. And we use it in the earnest money transaction. I think it would be useless in the deed. And I find that very interesting. By the time people get around to doing the deed, they're ready to buy. They've gone through the hassle. They've got their money. They're down at the title office or in the attorney's office, and they're all sitting there, and I just really disagree that they at that point go to the planning office and say, maybe I better check this language. I think they do it at the earnest money time.
I think if we could do it at earnest money.
Well, now, wait a minute. You folks said you have people coming in and telling you that they read their deed and come in, and I just would be very shocked to find that that's what's happening. I would say they're coming in with their earnest money. They're reading this warning and saying, what does this warning mean? Not at the time they're signing the deed.
Representative Bellamy, I can't say whether people saw it on the deed or on the earnest money agreement. All I'm reporting to you is what people at this meeting said, which was, yes, indeed, people have come in and said, we read this disclaimer. What does it mean? Can we do what we want with our property?
Would you indicated somebody's come into your office now. Would you agree? I mean, I would find it just shocking to find out that at the time everybody's down there looking at that instrument, right?